Welcome to The Mind Behind Leadership. You're listening to talkradio.nyc. My name is Graham Dobbin. And this evening, one of the things that we're going to be talking about this afternoon is New York. I keep on forgetting. One of the things I'm doing is I'm coming in live from Sydney, although we're live in New York today. So one of the things we're going to be doing is looking at gaining views and perspectives on leadership. We do this kind of every week. And it's on modern leadership most of the time. So we look at things such as conscious leadership and what the basis of that is. Today's guest is Dr. Roshanak Hashimi Yun. You're going to correct me on this. We'll catch up with Roshanak in a moment. But just to give a little bit of a background, Roshanak is a behavioral neuroscientist and the founder of Access to the Path. She's a highly trained scientific researcher who combines the power of modern science with emotional and spiritual intelligence to generate compelling, innovative strategies that help people, businesses become more purposeful, effective, and prosperous. Our passion has always been understanding and improving the human condition. So we're going to be digging into that significantly tonight. Before launching Access to Path, she was the founder and chief of the Human Brain and Behavior Laboratory in the Department of Stereotactic and Functional Neurosurgery at the University Hospital of Cologne. I am being tested today.
Yes, you are. I just thought I'd make it easy for you.
Thank you for that. Roshanak is a trained computational clinical and behavioral neuroscientist with a PhD in physiology and biophysics. Her work has spanned studies of the physical senses, social neuroscience, and the pathophysiology underlying the neuropsychiatric disorders. Was this deliberate?
For you to say.
Was this deliberate? It is absolutely not easy for me to say, and I've practiced this. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hello. It's lovely to be here. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. We can hear you. We can't see you yet. We'll get that sorted out later. One of the things, so I've just mentioned I'm calling in from Sydney. We're live in New York. Where are you based? Where are you at the moment?
At the moment, I am, in fact, in Cologne, Germany, but I'm a New Yorker, so usually I'm there.
Well, as you can hear, I'm a New Yorker as well. I've not lost my accent in any way, shape, or form. Look, we've got a lot in here. Can I just clarify as well? Your second name, Hashimi Yun?
Hashimi Yun, yes.
Oh, okay. Did okay with that.
Great.
It was the word neuroscience I struggled with. You know, look, we'll talk about how this, how your work, how your research, how your approach deals with business, how it deals with leaders. Really curious about how you got to this point.
Okay, I know it's not a, like most people's trajectories, it's non-linear. So when I was a kid, it started really as a child and it sort of went very all over the place. And then I ended up right where I was supposed to be. As a child, I was always fascinated with the way that the world worked, the way that humans worked, the way that we saw things, the way that the universe worked. So it started when I was about 4 years old. I learned about atoms and that they were the fabric of the universe. They were this tiniest element of the universe. And then I found out that they could be split. Boy, for a four-year-old brain, I just went, whoa, that's what I want to do. So I was always interested with the fabric of the universe and the way that the human mind perceived it and the difference between the brain and the mind. Because you would tell someone, I'm going to give you a piece of my mind. But you would never tell them, I'm going to give you a piece of my brain. That would just be wrong, right? So what's the difference between the brain and the mind? Right? So what's the difference between the brain and the mind? I was fascinated. And how does this fit into this whole framework of this universe and these atoms? How do they come together? What is the connection between everything? You know, how do we exist? And so I started studying at a very young age, behavior and psychology. And then I went to study genetics, you know, because that's also the basis of, yeah, of course.
But I'm just double checking. What were you, about six at this point? This is good.
No, but I did start studying psychology at 12. I went off to college at 16. Mm-hmm. I wanted to go 15, but you know, I didn't want to miss my senior year. And then I was among the first to graduate with a Bachelor of Science in Behavioral Neuroscience. And by then I had already studied gene cloning and genetics, because every single thing that I'm speaking about here, if you think about it, is really foundational. What makes it work? It really boils down to that, whether it's an atom, whether it's the brain, whether it's the genetics, what are the foundations? And so that's what I was always looking at, you know? And so eventually I went on and got a PhD and became a computational neuroscientist, and then went on to work in neuropsychiatric disorders. So from studying the normal brain to studying dysfunctional brain as a sort of a fast track to be able to understand normal function. Because when something is, it's sort of like when something is broken, then you can see what the mechanism is a little bit more quickly. And at some point, you sort of like basically the height of my career, I realized that I really needed to do a lot more with what I had than what I was doing. It was amazing to be helping my patients. I loved it. And to be helping people who had these different disorders, because I was able to study and to offer some insights into the different functions, the basis, the mechanisms of these different disorders, because we don't understand them. But I wanted to reach a larger audience. And so I started to realize that with my background, that I'd been studying philosophy and spirituality and psychology and all this hard science, chemistry, physics, neuroscience, that really, just as they used to be, you know, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 years ago, science and spirituality were one and the same. In fact, science and magic were one and the same. And so I realized this convergence point, again, going to the foundation of everything. And I was very much interested in bringing that forth to people, because I started to see that it was, you know, I went into science. I come from a family of people who really cared about other people in society. And I really had gone into science in order to be able to serve. And I did in what I was doing, but I wanted to do it on a larger scale. And I knew that I had the tools and strategies that would be able to help a larger population. And so finally, sort of that circuitous path, I came back to my roots, which is, let's go to the foundation of understanding human behavior and what makes us all light up, and apply all the knowledge that I've gathered throughout the years, personally and professionally, mm-hmm. and apply that to these new strategies that are really old strategies, but with new information.
You're going to hear me saying this a lot. I'm curious about this, because one of the things you said at the very beginning is this is foundational.
Yes.
So if it's foundational, we should surely expect most people to understand it, accept it, and explore it.
No.
I had a feeling you were going to say that. talk me through why we don't.
Because, first of all, and this is going to make me unpopular with some powers that be, but I'm going to have
it's
to
all
speak.
Right. It's all right. It's just you and I. Nobody else is listening. It's just a private Nobody. Conversation. We're all good.
And I believe every word you're saying. No, but it's true. I mean, look, neuroscience, your brain and body, you, each of us, is the greatest feat of engineering in the known world. It's absolutely phenomenal. And, you know, we live in a more or less capitalist society, certainly in the West. And so many of these companies and certainly marketers are using the power of neuroscience in order to promote their own causes. And I feel like most people are being put into the ring, into the arena, you know, like the gladiators were, with, like, you know, really going in there with a stick against these lions, against these giants. And that's just not fair. When you don't understand how your brain and body work, when you need to get that owner's manual, right? You need to get that instruction book. And I'm not saying that I have it, nobody does, but to the extent that I do know some things, it's at least let's level the playing field a little bit. And so gamers, social media, all these people, they're using cutting edge neuroscience. I'm sorry to say this, but really to destabilize society. And guess what? When you look around, you see society is destabilized, fragmented. People are feeling really stressed out. Anxiety is off the charts. The pandemic hasn't helped at all. We were facing a global mental health crisis long before the pandemic. I was writing about this. I was working on this. I was speaking about it around the world. And now it's gotten much worse. And, you know, understanding these foundational things for which oftentimes we don't have time for. There's an imbalance wherever you look, and things have been really fragmented. So one thing that the pandemic has shown, if nothing else, is how well connected we are. Sure, things have been siloed, even academically, so that we could understand them better and make them more tractable. But to leave them siloed has been a mistake. And to focus on how do you look, how do you speak, how do you this, how do you that, without balancing it, you know, with the other information. You know, if you look to the West, there's one level of imbalance. When you look to the East, it's another level of imbalance. And so really, people haven't had a chance. They're just trying to catch up with themselves. They're just trying to catch their breath. And also, who's going to tell them? Who's been talking to them? Where are they getting the information? The problem is that we are drowning in information, but what we need is knowledge, which is usable information, which is not a scalar. I'm going to start talking physics now, which is not a scalar, but a vector. A scalar is just a quantity. But a vector is a quantity with direction. And so if you can understand some of the basics of how things are happening from a reliable source, as opposed to everyone out there has now just got an opinion and they're all repeating the other, because people are really thirsty for this. And who has time to sort through all this? And now we've got fake news on top of it. It's just a lot going on. And people are amazing, and they want the knowledge and they care. But, you know, between the time and the level of what's out there, including some that's misdirected, it's going to be very hard for us to get that foundation, which is why I felt that calling to come forth and be able to do what I do.
You mentioned big business. You mentioned kind of influencers. We talk about gamers and social media and that type of thing. It's a huge question. What do you think the end goal is there?
You know, I think that as all of us have really been guilty of being short-sighted. And so I cannot speak for others and what their end goal is. I can't know that, but I can tell you what's going on. Mm-hmm. Everybody else can see it as well as me.
You're allowed an opinion. We'll give you that.
You know, I think just like we're starting to wake up to a lot of the things that we were asleep to before, because most people have been leading their lives unconsciously or non-consciously. Mm-hmm. And so we're waking up, and that's a beautiful thing. And if there were silver lining to the pandemic, it's given us an opportunity to sit quietly and to have the time that we've needed to be able to look and to study those foundations and to see what's been happening. So I really appreciate that everyone's got a different opinion. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, nobody wants to really hurt anybody else. You know, people aren't intrinsically bad. As long as they feel safe, they're actually quite nice. So I would say that the focus would be on feeling safe and making people feel stabilized. And then everybody's going to do a little bit better.
We're about to go to a break. When we come back from the break, I kind of want to explore a little bit more about the drifting through consciously and non-consciously. Is there a difference there? Just kind of notice the two words there. And certainly having a look at science, spirituality, and magic. Let's just see what the connection is there. You're listening to The Mind Behind Leadership. We're live on talkradio.nyc. My name is Graham Dobbin. We are with Dr. Roshanak Hashimiyun, and we're speaking conscious leadership. We'll be back straight after these.
Have you ever thought of reinventing yourself? Are you looking to create a new life's journey? Hi, I'm Kevin Barbaro, host of Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, live, 8 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live to hear me and my guests from a variety of different backgrounds. As a former college coach and a current full-time actor and owner of multiple companies, my show is as eclectic as my life. That's Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you interested in having a better relationship with yourself, others, and God? Greetings. I'm your host, Dr. George Andow, for the show, A Journey Through Into Awareness. On my show, we journey into the awareness that the mind of God is the true seat of our personal consciousness. We join together each Monday at 7 p.m., so tune in on Talk Radio NYC.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back to the Mind Behind Leadership. We've got another dancer. We've always got a dancer with that theme tune. I think we should be voting on that one, Sam. We are with Dr. Roshanak Hashimiyun. We're talking conscious leadership. Something you said just before the break, that we drift, or we, sorry, you didn't say we drift. You said people go through their lives unconsciously or non-consciously. Is there a difference there?
Well, I mean, yes. As a neuroscientist, I'm very careful with some of those words. First of all, consciousness has not been, we haven't agreed upon a definition of consciousness scientifically. And consciousness is different, is defined differently by scientists as it is by the medical community. And then colloquially, it's used quite differently. So I was referring to the colloquial use and then corrected it to the scientific use a little bit more. So the idea is that colloquially speaking, that we are not attentive enough to what is going on and intentional about the way we are moving through our lives. This is what I meant. Most people are being reactive, less responsive, and definitely much less intentional. We're just trying to keep up. It's like a treadmill.
So it's about being less intentional. This is something that's niggled me for a while now. We've got more information than ever. This is something you touched on as well. We've got more information than ever. We've got we can check facts. We can go in and check news. We can verify things from lots of different sources, and we can do that in seconds. Yes. Through phones, through whatever we want, just with our interconnectivity. And yet we still talk about fake news influencing people. We talk about the wrongs of the past or the influences of the past and past experiences still coming back and still seeing patterns of human behavior. Maybe you can give some insight. I don't know. Maybe that's a really big question. But what is happening there? I just don't get when people have got access to so much information to create knowledge that we can find ourselves in this position at times.
Oh, well, that's because you think you're rational. Mm-hmm. So I talk about this a lot. We have a rational brain, right? We have executive function, and its job is to do good decision-making. Mm-hmm. We also have what's known as the limbic system, and this is where our emotions live. And people often think, I think most people think, that emotions are just kind of there and probably don't realize that they're significant in the brain. And us being creatures of nature are prone to exactly what nature is all about, which is efficiency and optimization. There's nothing that we're going to have that isn't absolutely necessary. So our emotions are very, very important. And they are specifically important also for drawing our attention where it needs to go. So we do have the ability to make decisions rationally. However, number one, decision-making relies on emotion. And number two, things like stress and fear can cause the nice correlation between the frontal cortex and thoughts, actions, and emotions. That nice tight correlation starts to sort of go wonky, let's just say. And so even though we are rational, and we like to think that we're making rational decisions all day long, I am a rational human being. I am rational. I've got this amazing brain that can make rational decisions. And yet the vast majority of our decisions are emotional. While we do have the capacity to make rational decisions, we often make emotional decisions. And so, and no matter how far along we come technologically, we are still at the mercy of the foundation, which is our brain. And the brain is amazing insofar as it can learn. It is highly adaptable, but its greatest strength is also its greatest weakness. And if we're not paying attention to that, if we don't know how to use that, or if we allow others to use it intentionally while we are being unconscious, then we're going to have a problem. So number one, the answer to your question is that emotions are extremely relevant to decision-making. Number two is that emotions actually guide decisions. There are those who have all their cognitive function, intellect, and everything intact and have damage to the areas that are responsible for emotion and find themselves unable, although they've got all the mechanisms in place to make a good decision or a decision at all, they find themselves struggling to make a decision because they need that emotion to help guide it. And so when we aren't taught, as most people aren't, especially in the West, how to handle our emotions, then we try to barrel through them, we try to ignore them, we like push them down under, you know, we go around them, you know, we pat ourselves on the back for, you know, for being like Captain Kirk with the Kobayashi Maru, right? Let's just reprogram the computer. I got away with that one, you know. And but what happens is that you then, like anything, fail to learn how to handle your emotions. And as time goes on, it gets more and more difficult. But also, this sort of piles on. There are layers and layers and layers, and it's much more difficult to get through. With respect to the fact that there is all this information, and yet, if I to understand what you said, why are we still making bad decisions? Or why is it, I mean, it's so clear that this and this, and yet why do people believe that and that? That gets into a more complicated equation that includes things like, where are you getting your information? So if you're on Facebook and you're getting all your information from one place according to an algorithm, then you're just going to be continually confirming your bias. That's what these algorithms do, right? So if you and I did a Google search right now for the same term, we'd have very different answers. Google would respond to us differently, right? And so that's one thing. The second thing is people don't want to admit that they're wrong. There's this fear that I won't be accepted. There's this fear that I'll lose my tribe, the people who are around me. I may have come to the realization that what we've been believing isn't right, but I still want to be with my social circle, right? Mm-hmm. This social interaction is incredibly fundamental and important to us as human beings, for our longevity, for our health, for our happiness. And there's a slew of other things. So I think that just even starting with those basic things, it starts to become rather clear that it's not a simple equation and that human behavior is important and complicated. And this is exactly why we need more information on it.
This may be really simplistic, but kind of, I wrote down confirmation bias earlier, just when we were talking about this at the very beginning. But I just wonder if when emotions are so important to us, we see that in buying decisions every single day. We see how we're marketed to. It's always emotional connection. I work with sales teams. It's all, you know, the old adage is sell the sizzle, not the steak. So, you know, you sell the emotion with it, not the actual product. I wonder if it's just that emotional comfort with somebody else telling us we're right, or something else confirming we're right, that we don't explore any further. I don't know if that's too simplistic.
I'm sorry. So what was the
So I'm just wondering, when we are looking for information and we're looking for it, we get that confirmation bias. We get that we enter into confirmation bias. We see something that's familiar to us that confirms what we think. So we just stop looking.
So yeah, familiarity is a wonderful thing. The brain doesn't like uncertainty.
Yeah.
I can explain this to you in multiple ways. One is that, you know, you have up to 60,000 thoughts a day, and millions of bits of information are being processed by the brain per second. And so the brain really needs to optimize. It's 2% of your body weight and uses a minimum of 20% of your energy, which can actually go up to 50%, depending on how hard you're taxing yourself. And so the brain really needs to optimize. And certainty is a good thing. Stability is a good thing, because it's number one, its number one directive is your survival. And unknown is a threat to survival. There could be something dangerous that could threaten you and your life. So, you know, this is why we often stay in situations that are not ideal, let's just say. And, you know, we like to stay in things that are comfortable. We like to stay in what is known. Energetically, that's optimized. And also with respect to the idea that it's better to be in a thing that I know how to handle, however uncomfortable it may be, and I'm comfortable in that discomfort. So that is a truth.
Yeah. It's not painful enough for me to move and make another decision.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
right. Yeah. It's interesting. I was working with a leadership team last week, and we were talking about influence. I came across a study. I've tried to find it during the break. Came across a study that showed that when we're trying to influence people, we do it rationally. We kind of put all that rational thought, put everything behind it. Yet the most successful way is when we engage emotionally, when we inspire people to change with evidence rather than just the rational thought. So this is all tying in. I'm just really quickly, we're going to go to a break in a couple of minutes. What's your relationship with social media then? Considering, you know, what we said earlier, how do you use it, if at all?
I didn't. I was never on social media. In fact, I wouldn't even put my picture on the, I was the chief of the Brain Behavior Laboratory. And so I really needed to put my face up on the hospital website for the department, and I wouldn't do it, even that.
Wow. Okay.
And then, but it's only now that I am just getting onto social media, but because I have to, it's with purpose. I'm doing it purposefully.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And consciously. Nice. And intentionally.
So it's all good. We've got some kind of control around this. Nice. And we're going to go to a break. When we come back from the break, one of the things that you said, you know, it's about something you really cared about. And you said your family really cared about others. I'm really curious about how that showed up. And let's look at what we've been talking about, this conscious awareness of what's going around us and emotions and everything, how that translates into business and how leaders can use that.
Yes.
You're listening to The Mind Behind Leadership. We're speaking with Dr. Roshanak Hashimiyun. And we'll be right back after these.
Do you feel uninformed about menopause and how it impacts on your life? Hi, I'm Pat Duckworth, women's health strategist and host of the Hot Women Rock radio show, Empowering Women Leaders at Menopause. Join me every Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. UK time on talkradio.nyc. For interviews with inspirational women who will share their top tips to rock your world.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to Mind Behind Leadership. We're lucky enough to be speaking with Dr. Roshanak Hashimegun. She's calling in tonight, this morning, from Cologne. I know it's late there. You mentioned that this was something you got involved with, kind of exploring things. It started off with realizing what an atom was, etc. But you did this from a very early age. One of the comments you made earlier was that your family really cared about others. How did that show up?
So I come from a medical family. One of my family is a doctor, my nuclear family. My mother is a registered nurse, among other things. And so they weren't healthcare professionals just by trade. You know, you looked at my dad, it was like looking at Marcus Welby, MD. You knew he was a doctor. And both my parents just really cared very much about people. And so I grew up understanding the importance of being kind, of serving, of being a leader servant from the time that I was a child, not because they told me that, which they did, but because I saw it all the time. And it's only now that I'm an adult. And I mean, you know, I've got a few years on me that I see the differences, and I'm so grateful to have had parents who really led by example. They were extremely decent. I mean, I would find out acts of kindness that they did through other people, not even through them. There was an amazing example once that really, if I may share with you.
Of course.
You know, my dad was a physician, and physicians always have a hard time getting paid. It's true, believe it or not. And so he had a billing service. And one day we were, you know, we all had dinner together every night. My mom would make all, you know, homemade food. It was amazing. And while we were all sort of milling about and shuffling about and getting ready, my father was talking to my mother. And then he was saying that he was going to tell Toby not to charge this one patient. So this one patient had sent him a check for like $20 or something. And he's like, oh, so-and-so has sent me a check for $20. I'm going to call Toby and tell him to stop charging this guy. And I was like, what? You're always trying to get, like, it's so hard to get paid. Somebody's finally paying you. What? This was completely made no sense to me. And so my father turned around to me. He was amazing. And he said, if he's sending me $20 a month, he can't afford to pay me. I'm not going to put bread on my table by taking it off somebody else's. That was a very important lesson.
That's a big one. And it's kind of obvious when you think about it. If somebody's paying at that rate, yeah, you're right. It's big to them.
That's that conscious thinking. That's going through life when you're conscious. You see what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So what's that done for you then? How's that impacted you?
Well, I mean, every fiber of my being is about being good and doing good. I mean, I'm flawed. I'm human like everybody else. But my intentions and my focus is continually towards how can I elevate others? How can I share my blessings, my gifts, just like my dad did, you know? And so there are so many patients that he helped, so many things that I found out that he did as a physician and just with whatever, you know, blessings and gifts and skills that he had, you know, wealth in every way, whether it's your skill, whether it's your money, whether it's your time, whatever it is. And so I seek very much to do that. And my heart, you know, which I think is so important because it's the one organ that if it's in trouble, so are you. And if it's healthy, you're going to be okay. And so my heart is always focused on how can I lift somebody up today? How can I give them the tools so that they can fish? You know, how can I get, because the way to help, people are very smart. Most of the time they've got the answer, you know, just need a little bit of support and space. They just need someone to say, it's okay. You know, you got this, or, you know, just to give them, we're all getting beaten down all day long every day. Mm-hmm. And to just be able to lift someone up a little bit. And I know there's so many studies that for decades have shown that when a person is in a good state, in other words, let's say they, you know, there's this one example of an experiment is, you know, the experimenter has these subjects and tells them, and this is an old one, right? And tells them that the experiment is whatever it is, but in fact, it's something else. And what it is to see how they're going to respond based on their state. Their affective state. Are they in a, are they happy? And so they're in a phone booth. Yes, it's a very old study. They're in a phone booth and they're instructed to do something that is somewhat time dependent. And half the people find a $10 bill. And so they're happy, you know, wow, I found $10. They don't know that it was planted there. And then all of them have a passerby coming by and asking for directions. And the ones that found the money were always more helpful and kinder to the passerby. And this sort of experiment in different ways, shapes, and form have been repeated. And it is a very well-known thing that we're all like rocks in a pond. You know, there's that ripple effect. When someone smiles at you and you've had something good happen to you, you're going to be very different in the way that you interact with the world than if not, if you're neutral or if you're in a negative state, right?
Yep.
This is evidence-based. It's not just, you know, observational or conjecture, you know, there's a real biology to it.
And this, where we're talking about emotional, this is logical. This is, we know this intellectually, we know it. We know that what we should be doing, that we should be caring for others, that we should be smiling, we should be, that what we put out comes back. Most people actually get that, whether they've ever verbalized it or not. What's the challenge with doing it then? If we know this and we know the positive that it brings us, why do we think that it's such an unusual thing that people are going around caring for others, deliberately caring?
Well, I think most people are, first of all, you've made that mistake again of thinking that we're rational.
I make lots of mistakes. You're okay with it.
I do it all the time.
Well, I'll carry on after the show as well.
Me too. So that's the first thing. And then the other thing is that even though we know this, we're so busy trying to, as I said, sort of keep up with our own lives and constantly under the heavy weight of judgment and ultimately shame. And shame is a toxic emotion. It really gets at the heart of people, their sense of identity, their ego, their self-worth. And most people will make decisions, will be reactive based on a perceived judgment, based on whatever story is connected to the events that are happening, because the events themselves are neutral. We give value to everything. So people are good, you know, otherwise mm-hmm. then it wouldn't make a difference when something happened to them. Right. So they are, as you said, they are happy to be kind to others and so on and so forth, but it really depends on where they're coming from. It's also something that I've had conferences on this, you know, brain states. The preceding brain state will affect how your brain will process the next input that's coming in. So you're not, it's not like every moment is a sort of an equal blank neutral starting. No, you're not like that at all. There's this sort of undulations and changes, and each of those will prime the brain for the next thing that's coming. And so it will be interpreted through that. In fact, our memories are very fluid and labile. Every time you remember a memory, you change it. So your memories are never the same.
It's interesting. There are certain stories that I tell, just kind of trying to bring things to life when I've got groups. And I'm really aware that I don't never tell the story the same way twice. I remember something slightly different, or it's got a slightly different color to it, or I bring it to life in a different way. And every time I go, I've changed it again. And it's still my story. And it's still real and it's still true and everything like that. There's nothing made up about it, but I do tell it in a different way and kind of point out different things in it. So So we make the mistake, we try to be rational, we do all this. Conscious leadership then, when we think about it, when we talk about emotional, for some reason, it's still regarded as fluffy rather than practical at times. When we talk about emotional reactions to things, etc. How does that play out in the workplace? Have, in your opinion or what you've seen, how do leaders pull that together when emotional... Again, there's a logic to it that emotional works, but not everybody can do it.
So everybody can do it. But in particular, it's important for leaders to have emotional intelligence and spiritual intelligence. And I would like to take a moment to say that spiritual doesn't mean religious. A lot of people confuse the two. And something like meditation is a spiritual practice. And that this is really important for both people who are in the workplace as well as the leaders. Why? Because it offers stability. So emotional intelligence is the bridge between the heart and the mind. Mm-hmm. Emotional intelligence ties together, as we were saying before, how do I make the next move? In what way, shape, and form, when I say yes, or even when I say no, how am I saying it? How will that person receive it? You know, you can say, sit down, please be seated, or sit your butt down, you know, and I'm kind of saying, and then they mean very different things. Or you can even say, sit down with different intonations, mm-hmm. right? And so this is really relevant. And when you are practicing emotional intelligence, you are aware of the place that the other person is when you're giving them. So you understand that they're also not this neutral blank canvas, right? And so you might say, it's like when people go, this is not a good time to talk to that person or to ask that person something, you know, or this is a good time. And doing things like, leading should be from the front and the back, you know, and when you or your workers are practicing things like meditation, that gives them a stability. Meditation is known to change the structure and function of the brain. And in particular, it acts on what's known as the default mode network, which is active when you are in a resting state, but not focused on a task. And what it does is it actually changes the activation of certain, so it's an entire network and has different parts of the brain involved. And you will end up changing the activation of some of those regions in response to painful stimuli. And so in one experiment, they showed that people who were dispositionally mindful had a different sensitivity to physical pain. They had 120-degree heat probe, and they didn't have the same response as people who didn't have that. And also they had a 44% lower affective response to the pain. So their emotions are different. And that resting state dynamics can vary reliably predict how you will emotionally respond to things. So things like meditation, which is a spiritual practice, can come in very handy in the workplace, right? You're not looking for drama. And when it does happen, you're pretty even. See what I mean?
I'm going to go to final break. When we come back, I'd like to explore that more about meditation, because it's quite interesting. If you read books about famous people, successful people, successful business owners, the amount of people that get up early, they meditate, all this is part of their daily routine. And yet it's not practiced or it's not necessarily taken into the workplace or taken seriously in the workplace. So let's explore that a little bit further and maybe think about just some of the things that anybody's listening that they can do with their teams very quickly to bring that that consciousness there and open it up. We're speaking with Dr. Roshanak Hashimiyun. We'll be back after these.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Podcast Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Mind Behind Leadership live here on talkradio.nyc. We can have that music play a little bit longer if you still need to dance. We're good with that. We're good with that. Taking all this into mind then, we know how important emotions are, how they drive us, what happens if we're not conscious of what we do. What can leaders practically do with their teams? How can we take it in? How can we influence others? How can we open this up to others? What have you seen? I know that you work with businesses. What have you seen that's worked really well?
So, I mean, there are different approaches that you can take, but, you know, first of all, right now, everybody is very much concerned about workplace mental health. Mm-hmm. And that education, that knowledge that we talked about is really important as people start to understand how their brains and bodies work and also start to understand the idea of emotional intelligence and how practically it is applicable. Then, you know, you can have, number one, the knowledge. So there's the education, but then also these practices and evaluations, but not in the old school way, because that doesn't work. That just makes people nervous and feel judged and they're still trying to perform. So that's not good. But most importantly, it comes from the top down. Leadership is very, very important when, you know, it's sort of like how I learned from my parents. When there's a disconnect between what is being said and what is being done, it just really messes everything up. Yeah. So the most important thing is to educate the leaders and to have, it's sort of how they say the fish rots from the head down. And when the leaders become really stabilized, when they become very much aware, that when they practice emotional and spiritual intelligence, when they understand that how they are, and that they become okay, when they become okay with themselves by practicing different, is that us? Sorry, I heard something. Then I lost my train of thought. Okay, so.
Go find it. Where is it?
It's right there. So it's really important to start with the leaders, because when you start to stabilize the leaders, when they now can come out of the equation, they can judge better, they mm-hmm. can lead better, and that whole way of being, whether you think of it as energy, you know, and we've all experienced this. You walk into the room and you're like, ooh, something just went down here, you know, yeah. And you're like, yeah. So there's, first of all, that energetics that you can feel, but it's also something very practical and tractable. When you're not putting yourself in the equation because you're not worried about how you're being viewed, how you're being perceived, and your judgments and your shame and your all that stuff, and you are practicing emotional intelligence, of course, with the skills that you've learned, then you're really well positioned to support your team individually, to be able to optimize them in stabilizing them themselves so that they can bring forth their best product. Because for any company, your most important asset is your employees. You know, other than that, it's just theory, right? It's like a house is just a bunch of walls and maybe some wood and some nails and pipes and so on. So it becomes a home under different circumstances, right? Yeah. And so a company, you really need to take care of your employees because they are the face of your brand. They are your productivity. And when they feel good, then you have things like flow and motivation. So for example, using the word together, this is one of the things that you can teach in teams, causes people to actually work longer, harder, and more happily. So they actually move into what is called an intrinsic motivation state, which is flow state. And everybody wants to be in flow. And so people can be in teams and say the word teamwork and team all day long, but it doesn't have the same effect as even if you and I are in different parts of the world and you say, hey, let's do this together. That word together actually triggers something. And now I feel that we are connected, and that connection changes everything. I actually feel better. Right. So all we're ever trying to do all day long is connect. Connection is really the holy grail. And so in this way, for example, this is like a one little hack, you can actually get your teams to put in the work that they need to put in, but also be really much more satisfied with it and to work better together with the word together, for example.
It's interesting. You know what? I've used the word teams, and it was really interesting, because when I was asking the question, it didn't kind of fit for some reason. And I know that a lot of the things that we speak about now within business, within, it's all about community based. How do we build this community? The community seems to have more of an emotional connection than a team does for some reason.
Teams are also communities.
Excuse me?
Teams are also communities.
Yeah, no, I get it. I'm talking about the connection to the word. And people seem to be kind of more connected. There's more of a personal and emotional connection with a community than there necessarily is with a team. A team can be, from the discussions I've had with people, a team can be seen as to do a function or to get a result.
It's more of a unit. That's
a community.
Right.
A community is more based around personality, around people, about being, about values and beliefs.
A community can become a harbor, whereas a team can be just a unit. They're very different things.
Yeah. So what's the first thing? We've only got a couple of minutes left. This is this hour. I told you this would race in. What's the first thing? If you've got somebody that's curious about something like this, what's the first bit of advice? And that may be quite practical. When you've got a leader that's curious about how do they do this, what do you think the first steps are? What would you say to them?
I'm sorry, I missed something. How do they do what?
I'm saying if we had a leader,
yes,
in a business that was, yes, really curious about this and didn't, yes, know where to start, what would you tell them to do? What would your advice be?
oh, for somebody who wants to do this, the first thing they should do is start to go about understanding. Well, the first thing I would recommend is find someone like me, a transformational advisor, but someone who's really qualified, you know, because there are a lot of people out there. Neuroscience and the word neuro has become very sexy. I'm on Clubhouse now to answer your social media question of earlier. And, you know, I went through these bios when I first got there and everybody's got a brain and using the word neuro and like, and it's 9 out of 10 of them have nothing to do with neuro. I'm like, okay, I'm looking for the neuro and there's nothing there. Like the person's a marketer or the person is, you know, an influencer and they're like, I'm a neuro coach. And I'm going, how? Just because you said the word? Yeah. So you got to really be careful. There's a lot of snake oil salesmen out there. So check someone and make sure they're credentialed. But educate yourself just very simply. Look up things. Most people haven't heard the word spiritual intelligence. Look it up and find out what there is to it. And understand, and emotional intelligence. And understand that, and this is for everyone, the leader, the teams. I gave a talk about this very recently again, that hygiene, you know, I start the talk saying, hey, who here brushes their teeth? And of course, everybody raises their eye, brush my teeth, you know, twice a day. And you don't even think about it. It's non-negotiable. It's non-negotiable because, you know, you have to protect this physical aspect of you in order for it to function for you properly and for as long as possible. And yet you don't think about that when it comes to your emotional hygiene or your spiritual hygiene. You know, you think that that's an extra or a treat or when I have time for that. These are the three parts. And when you don't take care of each, then you're showing up to your life and to your work, you know, incomplete. One third of you is missing. So I would say find, you know, and we're there are more of these every day, people who and companies who are, you know, promoting conscious capitalism and teaching these sorts of skills and strategies.
Dr. Roshanak Hashimian, thank you so much. This hour has flown in. We know where we can find you. We can find you in Clubhouse. And no doubt you're going to get a few more requests, I believe, for your opinions and to be interviewed after this. You've been listening to The Mind Behind Leadership. We've been speaking with Dr. Roshanak Hashimian. Thank you so much to Sam Leibovitz in the background there for making sure everything runs smoothly. We'll see you next Thursday again. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Did you know that nearly 1 in 5 adults in the U.S. battles mental illness? Hi, my name is Albert Dabba. I'm the host of the show Extra Innings. Extra Innings, I discuss the topics of wellness, mental health, and the experience of surviving multiple suicides within my family. Listen live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern to Extra Innings for discussions with sports figures, artists, mental health professionals, and many others. That's Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Wise Content Creates Wealth. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Friday afternoon from 1 p.m. to 2. They say content is king. Well, wise content rules the world. Every episode features tools and tips for content marketing and business people telling the wise content stories of that success. Tune in every Friday from 1 p.m. to 2 on talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Passionate about the conversation around racism, Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Have you ever thought of reinventing yourself? Are you looking to create a new life's journey? Hi, I'm Kevin Barbaro, host of Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, live, 8 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live to hear me and my guests from a variety of different backgrounds. As a former college coach and a current full-time actor and owner of multiple companies, my show is as eclectic as my life. That's Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.